hands it off. Left circle, McNabb. Dorofeev, one-timer. Blocked. Rattles around. Score!
Nobody is ever satisfied with one. So we're back for a second hour of the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show.
Michael takes it on his backhand. Forehand pass. Hanifin! Score! Noah Hanifin powers the goal!
From the Findlay Chevrolet Fox Sports Las Vegas studio and live at lvsportsnetwork.com, here is Darren Millard and Ryan Wallace.
Hour number two of the VGK Insider Show rolling along here on a Wednesday. Ryan Wallace and Chris Chapman with you. The VGK Insider Show is brought to you by the Dollar Loan Center, where your first loan is on us. Apply for free at don'tbebroke.com to get up to $5,000. It's hour number two. Chris Chapman, what are we going to do?
Sticks down, drop the puck on hour number two of the VGK Insider Show.
All right, so this is my thought process here for hour number two. It's been a busy day in the National Hockey League outside of the Stanley Cup final. It's June 19th. The Stanley Cup final is going till at least Friday, so June 21st. And like every other team has to get going on their offseason, right? Like every other team has to figure out what their outlook's going to be. Like we are a week and a day away from the NHL awards. We are a week and 2 days away from the start of the draft. And we're about 11 days, 10 days out from free agency. So it's going to serve hour number two today as an extended one-timer segment. Now, we're not going to play the music. That'll be reserved for the second segment here. But there has been a lot of movement in the National Hockey League today. And I want to make sure that we get to all of the big hitters over the next 60 minutes or so. So we're going to start with the New Jersey Devils. The New Jersey Devils acquired Jacob Markstrom from the Calgary Flames for Kevin Ball and a 2025 first-round pick. That pick is top 10 protected, so it'll be a pick somewhere in the ballpark of 11 through 32, depending on, of course, what the New Jersey Devils are able to accomplish with Jacob Markstrom. The Devils get a goalie, and that full stop is the most important aspect of this offseason for the New Jersey Devils. I know that they bring in Sheldon Keefe. He's a great coach. That's important. You're hopeful that Dougie Hamilton is going to get back to full health. You're hopeful that Jack Hughes going into next year is going to be able to stay healthy. There's a lot of really good pieces in New Jersey that should force you into believing that this team is going to be good and going to be good for a long time. Their Achilles heel this year was goaltending. Their Achilles heel 2 years ago in the Stanley Cup playoffs was goaltending. It shouldn't be goaltending anymore. They cannot, the Devils being the team, could not have gone into next year without addressing their goaltending, and they did by going out and getting Jacob Markstrom. Chapman, you're a New Jersey Devils guy. What are your initial thoughts on this trade?
Well, I like it, but it begs the question, why not have done this earlier? You know, you were kind of floating around the playoff line for a majority of the season, and then it eventually you just fell off because you couldn't overcome the deficiencies you had. But outside of that, I like the move. I like the fact that you didn't have to give up Alexander Holt, so you didn't have to give up any of your top young prospects to do so. And, oh, by the way, you got Calgary to retain about $2 million a year in salary of Markstrom's of his salary. So you still have some flexibility. I'm assuming it's going to be Markstrom and Jake Allen as your tandem in New Jersey. I think that's not bad. I mean, Jake Allen has proven he could be a really capable backup in the league, and he's proven he could be a starter in the league. So I think you've now made a position of weakness a position of strength, because you've got a guy who, when he's on and when he's healthy, is one of the, let's say, top 10 goalies in the NHL in Jacob Markstrom. I mean, I don't think he approaches that top five, but he's definitely somewhere around that top 10 mark. So I think you've made your team a lot better today. I mean, Kevin Ball, good player, but I don't think he's one that the Devils have the that they're going to not be able to replace. They've got some good young players, and I think if Markstrom delivers for you, you don't really care what you gave up in 2025, because if you're the Devils, you're hoping that Calgary is making your draft pick in 2025, because that means you had a pretty good season. You hope, anyway. You're hoping you're not like 12th or 13th, which would be a disaster. But from the New Jersey perspective, I really like it. I think it was a move that needed to be made, and I think they've made their team better. And as you mentioned, if Dougie Hamilton is healthy, and he was not healthy for like three quarters of the season last year, I mean, that was a huge miss too. I mean, that he's kind of the leader of the blue line. So, you know, I think it's a good move, and I think it's one that probably puts them into playoff position, I think, without having to do anything else and depending on what happens in free agency. But I think today the Devils are a significantly better team than they were when the season ended for them just a couple months ago.
So when you think about it from this perspective, Jacob Markstrom is 34 years old. Couple more years left. You mentioned the retained salary. Like, that's important. That's a big key for the Devils moving forward. You look at the numbers for Markstrom over the course of his career. He's a 2.72 goals against average and a 909 save percentage. So a little bit better than league average, generally speaking. For a New Jersey Devils team that could not get league average goaltending at all over the last two-plus years, one of those years they make the playoffs and they win a round or two, like, you put average goaltending on this team and they are a legit playoff team year in and year out. And I think what you have here in Markstrom, like, is it all Mark? No. Is it the best goalie available? I don't think so. But it's the best goalie the New Jersey Devils have had in a long time. I'd make the argument that it might be the most steady, reliable goaltender that Sheldon Keefe is going to have at his disposal at any point in time in his coaching career. And let's not lose sight of this simple fact. A lot of people think about Toronto under Sheldon Keefe as this high-powered offensive juggernaut. And to a degree, they were. They played solid in terms of being able to put the puck in the back of the net, all of those things. But what Sheldon Keefe brought to Toronto, what allowed the Leafs to actually win a round in the playoffs, wasn't the fact that they outscored their problems. It's that they limited their mistakes and had structure in their defensive zone. If Sheldon Keefe can bring that to the Devils, if he can establish the structure that he's known for, or at least has been his calling card through the majority of his years with Toronto, and then you put Jacob Markstrom behind that, and he gives you league average goaltending, this team's a playoff team, and they could be a contender for the Stanley Cup, depending on any other moves they make, and health, and all of those things. This is a big turn-the-corner moment for the New Jersey Devils, and you know, I look at it from the Calgary Flames perspective. Like, you've got Dan Vladar, you've got Dustin Wolf. Like, they were looking to turn the corner and turn the page on Jacob Markstrom as far as their starting goaltender. You get a good piece in Kevin Ball. Is it the high-end prospect or young player? No, but you were kind of hamstrung by this decision that, you know, it was ultimately in Jacob Markstrom's hands.
Yeah, and I think from the Calgary perspective, I think they like both of those goalies. So, like, I think Dustin Wolf is a guy who I think a lot of people around the league feel has the ability to become what you gave up in Jacob Markstrom, if not better. I mean, he's only 23. I mean, you don't see a lot of goalies in the league that young. Generally, it's an older man's position. And you've got two young ones. And Dan Vladar is a guy I think a lot of people like as well. Like, maybe not household names, but I think two guys, if you're the Calgary Flames, you really like both of them. So for a team that's on the rebuild, and it certainly would appear that the Flames are definitely on the rebuild, it's a situation where, all right, well, you got a nice young piece in Kevin Ball, and you got a high draft pick potentially in 2025. So I think for them, it's kind of what was needed. And they're going to have a lot of draft picks over the years. I mean, certainly they've given up a lot the last couple of trade deadlines and off seasons. So certainly from their perspective, it's probably not the name that you were hoping for if you were a Flames fan, but you got to be happy with the first round pick.
Yeah, are the Devils a playoff team next year?
I think they are. Yeah. I think especially with what's going on in Carolina, you don't know what they're going to look like. I think the Devils lost a ton of games this year, as you mentioned, because they did not get league average goaltending. Akira Schmid and the other guys that they had playing in the net were just not good enough. And I think you hope Dougie Hamilton is back. I mean, when he's healthy, he's an offensive stalwart for them. Luke Hughes is only going to take another step forward. You have to imagine, you know, Jack Hughes dealt with a lot of injury issues this year as well. So you hope if you're the Devils that all those health issues are behind you, and now you've made your goalie position a position of strength. I certainly think if I'll put it this way, if they are healthy, they absolutely are a playoff team in the East. I think they're better than Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. I think they're better than Detroit. I think they're better than Buffalo. I think they're better than Ottawa, the teams that would be pushing them. And you only need to hope that someone falls off and you move up. Maybe it's the Islanders. Maybe it's the Capitals. I mean, I think they're probably better than both of those teams as well. So
it's 100% going to be the Capitals. It's 100% going to be the Islanders.
Well, yeah.
Let's.
I mean, I think we know why it's going to be the Capitals now.
Okay, so let's get into it. I didn't want to lead with this one because, honestly, I could probably do 2 hours on this trade alone. It's phenomenal. The Washington Capitals, who a week ago purchased Cap Friendly, and then ultimately made the decision that once we get through the opening of free agency, Cap Friendly is going to go dark. It is not going to be a resource for fans. It's not going to be a resource for media types like us. Like, we are not going to be able to use Cap Friendly the way that we have used Cap Friendly over the last handful of years. And I couldn't really understand why. I mean, I get why the Capitals would do it, because they didn't have the infrastructure in place to kind of keep up with everything around the league. They wanted it. They saw this proprietary, all that. They go and buy it, and now it's theirs. I understand that. But how convenient is it that the Capitals make this trade today, and then like July 2nd or 3rd, we're not going to be able to see that the Capitals are paying Pierre-Luc Dubois $8.5 million a year for the next 7 seasons. The Capitals acquire Pierre-Luc Dubois for Darcy Kemper. One for one. The background on this trade and the genesis of this trade is phenomenal. I'm going to take you back to June 27th of 2023. That's the date that will haunt Kings fans for a long time. That's the date Rob Blake traded for Pierre-Luc Dubois from the Winnipeg Jets. Blake sent Gabe Vilardi, Alex Iafallo, Rasmus Kapari, and a 2024 second-round pick to Winnipeg to get Dubois. They signed him. It was really a sign-and-trade, but they signed him to an 8-year, $68 million contract before he had ever played a game as a Los Angeles King. 8 years, $8.5 million AAV. How did Pierre-Luc Dubois perform under that contract in his first year with LA? Well, he scored all of 40 points. 16 goals and 40 points. That's it. $8.5 million. He's in a spot that he wanted to be in. He was highly motivated. He was supposed to care, supposed to give an ounce, and he scored 40 points. It wasn't a fit. It wasn't a fit. And Rob Blake gave up a lot to get Pierre-Luc Dubois. The commitment was there to Pierre-Luc Dubois. I know that there were rumblings about will the Kings buy out Dubois. It didn't really seem like a scenario that was going to work out for them. But to be able to flip Dubois to the Washington Capitals to get a goaltender that admittedly should cause a little bit of concern for Kings fans because he hasn't been particularly good over the last couple of years. Is that a product of playing in Washington? Maybe. The goal was to get out from under this contract. It's going to be an albatross. It will be a mistake for the Washington Capitals, and I'm going to list out my reasons as to why I believe that in just a couple of minutes. But in the end, LA gets out from under one of the worst contracts in the league, full stop. They don't have to retain salary. It's completely off the books. And by doing this now, LA's got another $3.5 million or so to play with Kemper coming back into the fold. So for a team that needs to address a couple of more areas and certainly needed to address goaltending, they do those two things. I think they get better addition by subtraction, Pierre-Luc Dubois no longer being a part of the organization, and they were able to get the trade done before Dubois' no-move clause kicked in July 1st. It was all about timing. It was incredibly important to move on from this player. LA was able to do it. They made a mistake. They recognized that they made a mistake. They gave up a ton to get him, and it hurts to have to move on this quickly, but I think ultimately it's the best-case scenario for LA.
Yeah, I remember doing the show with you the day that trade went down, and you and I were both of the opinion that this was not going to be a good trade for the LA Kings. And it wasn't even so much that we were worried about Pierre-Luc Dubois being toxic. I think we were just worried more about what the Kings gave up to acquire him. And it turned out
Let me jump in. They gutted their depth for a player that doesn't care.
Right.
And listen, I'm not sitting here saying that he's never going to care. I'm not sitting here saying that he can't find it with some team when he's super highly motivated. But the fact of the matter is, it waxes and wanes when Pierre-Luc Dubois feels like playing hockey. Well, and when you're making $8.5 million a year, you cannot decide that you're not going to play tonight or you're not going to give it your all. You have to set the example, and he couldn't do that.
Right, and that's the key here. The fact that he didn't put the effort in. And the Kings were a good team, and he didn't put the effort in. I mean, You look at what he gave you in the playoffs. You got one goal out of the guy, and it was in the game you lost 7-4 to end your season. I mean, there was nothing. This is a top-line player making $8.5 million, and you got one goal from him in the closeout game that you were blown out in. I don't really care what the Kings got back. I mean, it was nice that they were able to get Darcy Kemper, who I think the crazy thing is I had kind of completely forgotten that Darcy Kemper played for the Washington Capitals because they were just a very forgettable team this year. But I think the idea that Rob Blake was able to get out from this, like sometimes teams will say, you know what? We're going to give it more time. Maybe we can make it work. The Kings realized it wasn't going to work. And the Kings knew they had to do something to get out. And look, they've got a bunch of cap space. So yeah, they gained $3 million in cap when you factor in what Dubois was making as opposed to what Darcy Kemper makes. And I think they maybe, I don't know, I feel like maybe it's a wash at the goalie position because I don't really think Cam Talbot was anything special. I mean, it was okay, I guess. But like you were able to move away from a player that you realized was not going to help you win, was way overpaid, and now you go out and you've got a ton of cap space in free agency, and you can go out and you can make some moves and rebuild that way, and maybe you're a competitor again in the Pacific Division. I think that's the hope from the Washington perspective. I don't know why you make that move. Like I don't.
Well, I know why. I know why. I know it's why every team has made a play for Pierre-Luc Dubois, right?
Like,
it's why
the
Winnipeg Jets. It's why the Winnipeg Jets traded for him, right? Like you trade Laine for Dubois, you are hoping that you can unlock Dubois. And to be fair, Dubois' numbers with Winnipeg were really good. 63 goals in 195 games. Like, he was nearly a point a game player for Winnipeg. Like, that's the closest to being unlocked as Dubois has been, and he just didn't want to keep playing there. Like, it's astounding to me on a number of different levels, right? Like, the rumors have been out there for years, and that Dubois wants to be a Montreal Canadian. So what I don't understand in this scenario is, if that's what you wanted, why do you green light this trade to LA? Why do you sign that contract in Los Angeles if ultimately that's not where you want to end up? Like, why are you committing to an organization for 8 years if that's ultimately not what you want to do? And if you are the type of guy, as Pierre-Luc Dubois clearly is, when his heart's not in it, none of him is in it. Like, when he's not fully happy, fat and happy, you're not getting the best of Pierre-Luc Dubois. So if you are only interested in one spot and one spot only, if you believe that's what it's going to be that unlocks you, that takes you to another level, that makes you a superstar because you've got all this talent, but you just don't put it together night in and night out when you need to, why are you even dealing with these scenarios? Like, why would you sign an 8-year, $68 million contract if you knew full well you were just going to go through the motions like you did in Columbus, like you did in Winnipeg? Like, this is now four teams in 8 seasons for Pierre-Luc Dubois.
Yeah, well,
at some point, it's not everyone else's fault. Right? Like, it's not everyone else. It's not Columbus's fault that they couldn't unlock you. It's not Winnipeg's fault that they couldn't figure it out. It's not LA's fault that you gave them a 16-goal and 40-point season when they literally gave you the contract, the money, the status, the push up the lineup, everything that you could ask for as a guy that wants to be a superstar in the league. What do you think Washington's going to do for you? At some point, you have to look in the mirror and say, I can't take nights off if I'm going to be an $8.5 million guy a year.
Well, and that's just it. Because you look at his numbers, and they're good. But he's never scored 30 goals in a season.
Right.
He's got good numbers, but he's not. He doesn't have elite numbers. But he's paid elite money for a guy who just has given you good production. And the biggest issue here is he's gone to a team that's worse.
Mm-hmm.
Like, outside of Ovechkin and Tom Wilson, I don't know what the hell the Washington Capitals are. I don't know what their identity is. Like, they're not a they're probably not a playoff team. Like, they're not.
Their identity, Chapman, is getting Alex Ovechkin the all-time goals record. That's what their identity is.
That's who they are.
And so in that regard, sure, fine. Why not? Like, if you think Pierre-Luc Dubois can center Alex Ovechkin and get him to that milestone because he's super talented, by all means. Like, it's not like the Washington Capitals are going to be playing in a ton of really impactful, meaningful games. The only thing that matters to that organization right now is Ovechkin scoring a bunch of goals. That's it.
Yeah, maybe Dubois helps him score some more. I don't know, but I wonder what Capital fans are thinking today. Like, I'm guessing they're like, Darcy Kemper, all right. I mean, he never really lived up to the contract, and you know, he hasn't really been great here, but Pierre-Luc Dubois, like, this kind of feels like a trade where you're like, if you're a fan of either side, you're looking at it very different ways. Like, if you're a Kings fan, you're like, yes, we got rid of Dubois' contract.
Yeah.
But if you're a Capitals fan, you're like, we just got a guy.
So Pierre-Luc Dubois and Tom Wilson combined are going to make $15 million against the cap next year.
Yeah, no thanks.
And here's the question that I have for you. Dubois got 7 years left at $8.5 million, okay? The no-move clause kicks in this season. July 1st is when the no-move clause kicks in. It's a no move through 27-28 in 28-29. It becomes a modified no trade clause. in 28-29, it's a 15-team no trade. In 29-30 and 30-31, it's a 10-team no trade. What's the likelihood that at the end of this contract, Pierre-Luc Dubois is still a Washington Capital?
I would say zero. There's no chance.
Okay, what's the likelihood that Pierre-Luc Dubois is bought out from this contract?
I would say very likely. I think at some point the Capitals will say, yeah, we're done with this guy. We're going to buy him out.
What's the likelihood that Pierre-Luc Dubois is moved at some point in the next four seasons while he has a no-move clause?
I would say that's a real possibility, too. I mean, obviously it would depend on who the team is, but my thought is there's only one team that he would waive it for.
I disagree with that. I disagree with that. I think if you're looking a year or two down the road and Dubois doesn't mesh with the Capitals, or he has a disagreement with his coach, or he gets benched and is mad about it, or whatever the case may be, Pierre-Luc Dubois will literally waive his no move to go anywhere but the place that he doesn't want to be. Like, and that's the issue. That's the issue. Like, if you are a player and you've got one destination in your mind and you can't even be patient enough to get to that point where you can call your own shots and you just kind of blow in the wind and go wherever you want, and then you get slighted or you're upset and you just decide that you don't want to be there anymore, and then you move on to the next place that you think is going to give you what you need, and then, oh, by the way, it doesn't because it's not actually what you want. That's Pierre-Luc Dubois. In 2 years, 3 years, whatever it might be, when he is unhappy with how things are going in Washington, he will force a trade, he will waive his no-move clause, and it will be like clockwork. He'll go to any team, literally anyone, so long as it's not the place that's making him feel bad.
You're probably right. You know, I'm still surprised it only lasted a year in L.A. Like, I would have thought he would have had a little success in Los Angeles. Like, it's a good locker room. You've got good leaders. It was a fairly good team. It's a nice place to live, especially when you're making that kind of money. You're close to the beach.
Yeah.
Like, I would have thought it would have lasted more than a year in L.A., but good on the Kings. I mean, you got to give credit to good organizations when they realize something's not working and we're going to cut bait. And that's what they did.
Now, here's the thing. You cannot disassociate what Rob Blake gave up to get Pierre-Luc Dubois in the first place.
No.
You understood why they made the trade. You look at Dubois as a game breaker, and in the playoffs against a team like the Edmonton Oilers or the Vegas Golden Knights or insert any team you'll see in the Pacific Division or the Western Conference, you need a game breaker. Unfortunately, their gamble was on a guy who either can be a game breaker or can decide he just doesn't want to or isn't feeling like it that night and then take complete series off. That's the mistake from the Los Angeles Kings perspective. Credit to them for recognizing that they made a mistake and moving on as quickly and efficiently and as tidily as you can possibly move on. If you can't make it work as a player when it comes to effort with Anje Kopitar and Drew Doughty in your locker room, good luck. Truthfully, honestly, good luck.
Yeah, that's where I'm at. Like, I mean, those are two very good. I mean, listen, I think most players would want to play with two guys like that. The fact that he just was disinterested, it kind of says a lot more about him than it does about the Kings.
100%. We're going to take a break and come back with one-timers next on the VGK Insider Show.
Carlson left corner, centered, one-timer, score!
It's time for one-timers. One-timers. A quick look at news and notes from around the National Hockey League. Brought to you by Paul Padilaw. It's not about the injury, it's about the recovery.
One-timers, news and notes from around the National Hockey League, brought to you by Paul Padilaw. It's not about the injury, it's about the recovery. It was a pretty good day for the San Jose Sharks. First and foremost, they claimed Barkley Goodrow off of waivers. 3 years, $3.6-ish million AAV for Barkley Goodrow. Former Shark. If you are a Golden Knights fan, you hate him because he is a former Shark. you hate him because he scored the game-winning goal in not a major. Here's the thing with Barkley Gaudreau. I said yesterday that I could see a contender, a team that is on the cusp, looking to bring in a player like Barkley Gaudreau, because what he does for you isn't necessarily get you to the playoffs, he gets you through the playoffs. What I mean by that is some players get you to the dance, right? Some players have great regular seasons. Some players put up the stats. Some players propel you to getting to the Stanley Cup playoffs. And then there are players like Barkley Gaudreau who get you through the playoffs, who get you over the hump, who help you establish a winning culture and help you win games when it matters the most. Don't believe me? Barkley Gaudreau in the regular season, 4 goals. Barkley Gaudreau in the playoffs, 6 goals. He just elevates his game when it matters the most. Now, why would the San Jose Sharks, a team that is probably 3, 4, 5 years away from getting to the playoffs, bringing in Barkley Gaudreau? Why are the Sharks helping the Rangers clear that cap space? Well, San Jose has done a lot of losing. San Jose has disrupted the culture of their room in a lot of different ways. First of all, when they moved on from Joe Pavelski, but you can also look at moving on from a player like Barkley Gaudreau as well. The fact of the matter is, their culture has changed, and they need to get things back on track, and Barkley Gaudreau helps you do that. He's a leader. He's a locker room guy. He is going to be able to impart the wisdom that you're going to need to impart to players like Will Smith and Macklin Celebrini when San Jose selects him first overall in the draft this year. When those guys come in, you have to insulate them with veteran players that have been around the block and know what it takes to win. You need to be able to establish a culture where winning is not tolerated so that you can continue to push in the right direction. And I think that is a big reason why the San Jose Sharks go out and they claim Barkley Gaudreau off of waivers. It's not going to help them in the short term. You're not really going to be able to flip him at the trade deadline either. Like, that's not something you're going to be able to do, at least not until he gets closer and closer to the end of that contract. But you bring him in to try to reestablish a winning culture. That, to me, is what I believe Mike Greer was trying to do.
Yeah, and for a team that is as far under the cap as they are, it's really not a, there's no risk involved in this for them. It's a move where
you
try to build up to get close to that floor. And in their case, you bring a guy in who's been there for the good times and a guy who's scored some really big goals for teams in the playoffs. He's a winner. He's a guy who's got one or two rings. So certainly he's a guy who's going to help your young players mature, learn the ropes, learn what it's like to be a professional. And that goes a long way. Like, I'm a big believer in young teams having a good veteran presence in the locker room. Maybe not superstar veteran players, but veteran players who are professionals and guys who go out and they perform every night. They understand their job. They understand their role. And for Barkley Gaudreau, this is his new role. He's going to be a mentor now. And I'm sure, you know, he's probably okay with that.
So I mentioned it was a good day for the San Jose Sharks. It wasn't just claiming Barkley Gaudreau off of waivers, but they acquired Ty Dellandrea from the Dallas Stars for a 2025 fourth-round pick. Dellandrea is an unrestricted free agent. You've got to come to terms on a contract there with the player. But, you know, it's a similar scenario to Barkley Gaudreau, though I believe there's more offensive upside for Dellandrea in terms of being a regular season guy. He scores big goals too. Like, there are clutch moments from Ty Dellandrea in the playoffs. This is a guy that works and works and works. And again, when you are infusing the next wave, right, the next generation of player with the San Jose Sharks that you believe can lead you out of mediocrity, or, you know, in this scenario, just a catastrophe when it comes to San Jose the last couple of years, to the playoffs, to contention, to beyond, hopefully, a Stanley Cup if you're a San Jose Sharks fan. Like, you need players like Ty Dellandrea who just put their heads down. they work their butts off and they try to set an example. You need to insulate the younger players with guys like Dellandrea and Gaudreau. And I think this was really a signal to the rest of the Pacific Division that it's not going to be an easy 2 points every time you play the San Jose Sharks.
Well, there's a ton of upside with Dellandrea. He's a guy who he was a first round pick in 2018, 13th overall. There just wasn't a spot for him in Dallas. Like, that team has drafted so well over the years that sometimes it takes guys a little longer to develop. And I think maybe, I'm not saying Jim Neal grew impatient with him, but I mean, they have so much young talent that for Dallas, you understand that maybe he didn't catch on as quick as guys like Robertson or Harley. But what I really like about Ty Dellandrea, and this is where doing what I do is certainly beneficial. I've been in press conferences where Ty Dellandrea's been at the podium, and it doesn't matter who's up there with him. They absolutely love Ty Dellandrea. He strikes me as a great guy, a good dude in the locker room, like guys who people gravitate to. Like, they would all tell you. Like, he's a guy who we love going out there and seeing score goals for this team. And, you know, he scored some big goals in against Golden Knights in the last couple of years in the playoffs. And this is from a part-time player. Now he's going to have an opportunity to be a 82-night-a-year player. And I think he's a guy who's got a lot of upside. He's got it's there for him. I think it's just got to come together. He's very young, and it'll be a fresh start for him, and maybe it'll turn out to be a good start for him.
Like, here's the thing. You mentioned it. There's not a spot with the Dallas Stars. Like, Logan Stankoven has come in, and he is going to be an incredibly good middle six guy for Dallas. Jason Robertson, you mentioned him, but then you've got Maverick Bork, who, again, is either going to be top six or middle six at best. Like, that's the thing with the Dallas Stars. They are on their way to essentially having 4 second lines, right? And for Dellandrea, like, there's upside there, but he's not going to beat out Maverick Bork for a spot next year. It's just not going to happen. And that's okay, but you give him an opportunity on a team that's growing and developing, and you give him more of an opportunity to be an every night player, he's gonna open up some eyes. So I love this move for San Jose. It's a good spot for them to be in. And I think they did a lot of really good things today in just maturing their team and changing the course of the culture that has surrounded San Jose for the last couple of years. Chatter surrounding Ottawa. There's some information kind of floating around that they're working on something involving Jacob Chychrun. They are aggressively pursuing Linus Ullmark. The fact of the matter is, for the Ottawa Senators, they have to address multiple positions, right? Like, for Ottawa to improve, they need to get better in goal, they need to get better on the blue line, and they have to get better up front. So take your pick of whichever domino you feel like has to fall first. I would argue that it's probably Ullmark more than anything else, but it sounds like in the next couple of days, things might look a little bit different in Ottawa.
Yeah, certainly the chatter, and you see it from multiple people around the league, that it's, I mean, I'm surprised Chychrun wasn't moved at the deadline, but, you know, this is a guy who for his entire career has played on bad hockey teams. And I think we want to see him have an opportunity to play for a good team just to see what he's really capable of. Because I think he's well-liked around the league as far as being a really good player. So I'd like to see him play on a contender just to see how high the ceiling really is with Jacob Chychrun.
Yeah, I do too. I'm just trying to determine what Ottawa gets for Chychrun. Right? Like, where does that needle move? How much interest is there around the league? Can you drive up the price on the player? Because I agree with you. I think that you put Jacob Chychrun in the playoffs, and I think that there's another level to his game. You just haven't been able to see it yet.
Yeah, I look at it from this perspective. No matter what the Senators get, it's not going to be enough. Because it's the Senators. That's what
eventually,
they do.
Yeah, yeah. It's not Pierre Dorion anymore, Chapman. Steve Staios.
We're a team.
God, I love that.
Yeah, it's not that guy anymore.
I love that.
But, okay, so, like, with New Jersey getting better today, like, Florida's going to be good. Boston's probably going to be good. Toronto's probably going to be good. I'm not going to believe that Tampa's going to miss the playoffs until they miss the playoffs, though we have a Steven Stamkos discussion to have at some point here.
Yeah, getting closer.
I mean, Ottawa's not going to, like, they're not going to be a playoff team next year.
I don't even think they're close.
No matter what they do.
I think they're probably further away today than they were when the season ended.
Those are your one-timers for today, Wednesday, June 19th. Catching up with Chapman is next.
When the guy wouldn't stop talking, we had no choice but to give him his own segment. It's time for Catching Up with Chapman.
All right, Ryan, so I said, did the old classic radio tease where I was going to look up teams that have forced a Game 7 and what their records were in those Game 7s. So in the four major U.S. professional sports, the team that has forced a Game 7 has lost 10 of the 15 times that it has happened. It's never happened in the NBA where a team has come back from 3-down to win a series, although four times they have pushed to a Game 7, the last being Boston last year. They were losing 3-0. They forced a Game 7, which they lost at home to the Miami Heat. So in the NBA, it's never been done. It's happened twice in Major League Baseball where a team is forced to Game 7. Once, the aforementioned Red Sox in 2004 when they came back to beat the Yankees. However, in 2020, the Astros trailed the Rays 3-0, and they ended up losing the Game 7 to Tampa in that series. And in the NHL, which is the only one where there's been any sustained success of teams coming back, four times a team has won when trailing 3-0 in a playoff series. They have lost 5. So the odds kind of 50-50 for both of those teams in the if there is a Game 7. Interesting here, 1975 New York Islanders. They trailed 3-0 to the Pittsburgh Penguins, came back and won that series. Then they trailed the Philadelphia Flyers 3-0 and forced a Game 7, which they ended up losing. So interesting for the 1975 New York Islanders, who won 8 elimination games in those playoffs.
So it was those Islanders, Toronto, L.A., and Philadelphia that came back.
Yep, yep. Wow. Chicago lost.
I know my hockey. Yeah.
Yep. All right, man.
I know my hockey history.